All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Friday. Yay, it's Friday, October 7th, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Friday, everyone. It is a very pleasant 62 degrees, partly sunny here in upstate New York. It's supposed to be another wondrous day. And then it's going to get cold this weekend. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Synthetic Life, DARPA Gone Mad, and the New Space Race. And we have worked on a progression here for the last week or two, looking at synthetic biology and some of the crazies in science and some of the things that they're doing. DARPA now has this new synthetic program where they are looking to create not only life forms that have never been seen before, like to terraform a planet or to help clean up the one we got and we messed up. They're also looking at creating materials that can be integrated with building materials such as living houses. Right, we read that yesterday. Houses that can react to your environment, repair themselves, self-repairing cars, color-changing paint. These are all in the wonders of the nanoscale. We have nanotechnology and micro living machines running rampant. We covered a story, I don't know if it was this week or last week, about, I think it was last week, about Microsoft. Microsoft and Zuckerberg both came out a week or so ago talking about how, of course, they're going to cure all disease. That was Zuckerberg. And Microsoft announced they're going to cure cancer in the next 10 years. Well, I see this title. I think this is the same story, but from a different perspective. Microsoft's developing computers made from DNA to, quote, solve the problem of cancer as if it were a bug. And they're going to make these little blood nanobots, like we talked about, or maybe even gut nanobots, brain nanobots, who travel all over, be programmed with parameters to be able to watch, detect, and tamp down on illness and inflammation. Now, the interesting part about all of this is the timing. Now, when we first started this show way back, one of the very first stories, maybe it was even the show I did before this, that WTF was kind of like this show, except we would laugh a lot more and there were a lot of other people on it. But it was pretty much like this, like, can you believe how insane the news is? Well, I guess I can now. It's been a number of years. But one of the very first stories that we had done way back, somewhere on one of those shows, was about how when we go to the stars, we're not going to have doctors. We're not going to have manufacturing facilities. We're not going to have the creature comforts of Earth that we take for granted today to get our instant gratification. We're going to be a long, long way from home. So one of the ways they postulated that we would be able to do that would be with some of these newfangled technologies that at that time were just on the drawing board. But I don't know, more and more that I dig in, it sure looks like, I just saw something the other day, I was reading about nanomachines, because we're going to look, the Nobel Peace Prize that was just handed out for 2016 was handed out to three scientists who just won the prize, not the Peace Prize, the Science Prize, Nobel Science Prize. They just won the Science Prize for making micro nanomachines, because it has changed the planet. And in one of the stories I read yesterday evening, the one statement caught my attention. I've said this before about all this technology. This is only the beginning. And that's the scary part. So Microsoft announces their little nano robot doctors for your blood. Something that years back, we were told DARPA was working on developing. Remember, it all comes sprinkle funded somewhere along the way from the DOD and DARPA and Mad Science Command Department. But DARPA had been working on developing some of these little nanoblood doctors intentionally for future space missions and solar system exploration. I know that sounds crazy, but guys, we have been establishing little by little, doing baby steps. For those of you who are like me, when we first look at some of this technology, we go, whoop, whoop, okay. Except that the more we dig in, the more we do some critical thinking and we really start finding proof and reading what they're doing in the labs and hear some interviews from the actual program managers that are running it, like the one we heard a couple days ago, the very first DARPA Voices from DARPA podcast, start to realize very uncomfortably that all this stuff isn't crazy talk. And there's a way lot more going on than we could have ever possibly imagined. So, Microsoft has vowed to solve the problem of cancer. Remember, that was that dangling carrot. Don't bite it. It's poison. Within a decade, by using groundbreaking computer science to crack the code of disease cells so they can be reprogrammed back to a healthy state. Remember, they already have a programming language for cells, and now Microsoft is learning. And I even told you it was kind of like .NET, reusable little components. And that's kind of how they're doing CRISPR, too. Zoop, zoop, zoop. Move this little snippet in and this little one out, and let's make it do this, that, and the other thing. I mean, we've basically been reduced down to, and I don't remember, was it TIPS? I don't know. There's a programming language. No, TIPS was the stem cell CRISPRing for cancer. I don't know. Whatever the programming language is for cells, they are able now with all the sequencing to take certain traits that they want. They got a library of traits. Pick, mix, and match. Zip and unzip. Zip, zip. All the framework is in place now. And it's not just in a laboratory anymore. We're discovering, like, the terahertz, some of those terahertz equipment, like just a New York City stop and frisk machine given to the NYPD by DARPA to get around the unconstitutionality of stop and frisk. Now they just gave them this terror scanner that can scan through everybody's clothes as you're walking by and you'll never even know it. Nope. They can get a good cat's eye view. And as a matter of fact, as you're walking through the scanner beam that you don't even have a clue that you're walking through, because it could be not only a naked body scanner that the NYPD's got placed out there somewhere, but we found out that that terahertz was being used as an interim communication medium between the cellular networks and the Wi-Fi. And they had these little mini cell phone towers now that they're putting all over the cities. Beep, 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 beep. It's kind of like the last mile of connectivity to then get it a connection to the main tower. But interestingly enough, again, it's using the same technology, and this is the technology we discovered that can easily unzip DNA. You know, somewhere out there, there's got to be a lunatic who has decided to pull the pin and the ticker. Thought about this in the shower the other day. You know, they've announced, we read yesterday, they announced funding $19 billion, was it? Let me scroll up. $19.5 billion just the other day, September 23rd, a week or so ago. Announced, approved by the Senate for NASA's 2017 budget, and they have officially announced we are going to Mars as people. Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, Branson. And I just saw now Boeing came out. They're going to actually try and beat Elon Musk to Mars. So there must be a pretty big prize there. Gotta make you wonder if they promised whoever makes it, since these are the same guys who are in cahoots deciding who gets to go mine the moon. Gotta make you wonder if part of that prize isn't giving some sort of exclusive rights to mine Mars. And as we're looking at molecular construction, material design and manufacturing out of living organisms and raw materials in your environment. We've listened to a few little snippets of things, them talking about being able to do that now. Makes you wonder how much of a huge benefit, how much of future riches will be rained upon the company that makes it there and starts decolonization with all those raw materials on the planet. And as we are ramping up technologies such as that Biological Technologies Office out of DARPA that is about all things weird and wacky, like this ability to build homes out of biological materials, houses made out of teeth and bone. That's their engineered living material program. You know, like I said yesterday, you cannot transport full living quarters, full raw materials that far away. It's just not going to happen. So you have to be able to identify and then utilize raw materials at a level that we've never seen before. And since we don't have full-blown manufacturing facilities on Mars or the moon, these technologies have been envisioned for a very long time. So now here we are. We got this $19.5 billion all approved. We got all the big boys who's been testing rockets here for a good year, two, three plus, you know, space shuttle. Even though I thought she still had a whole bunch of good flights in her, they mothballed her, and I was really kind of perplexed, because then all of a sudden, here we are, depending on countries such as Russia, to cart up our supplies and stuff and our astronauts to the space station. Didn't make sense at all, but see, we had to cut off the taxpayer-funded space programs. We can get more innovation. We get more hungry people. We get all these rich tech billionaires who are going to do all the legwork and do all the hard stuff, and we can take all this other money and put it into our technologies, such as engineered living materials. Remember that? DARPA's the dark side of NASA. They've had their thinking caps on for a while. So we're going to put our money into this engineered living material. We're going to come out 2-3 years ago, as we're talking about synthetic biology, and just have a conversation about how we're planning and being able to not only database DNA sequences from every living creature on the planet, but then have tools to push a button and create life on the fly when needed that will exactly fit into the environment and the situation that I need a piece of life to do something for me for. You know, I have a very low oxygen environment, and I have lots of sand and nitrogen, maybe some carbon. I need some microbe created who can run on low solar energy and low oxygen to create me a motor fuel that looks like this. Boop! You know, and then it just starts spitting out little microbes. And you release the hounds. I mean, it's just beyond comprehension. And they even announced that they were going to try this stuff on Earth first before we ever make it to Mars. And how interesting that we've found how many puddles now this year in our studies. Puddle after puddle. We had that one big underground waterway aquifer in Colorado. We discovered like 35 new branches of life on the tree of life. Just out of the blue, just appeared, never before seen. In, you know, over the last few years, it's been amazing how many never before seens we've had. I keep saying it's a petri dish. This literally is a petri dish. And so we got this project. Been around for a while. And it's sponsored by NASA, I thought. And let's look it up. Because I haven't heard about this in a while. It's called the 100-Year Spaceship. At one point, I even thought I saw Bill Clinton get behind this, like, way back when. 100-Year Starship. That's what it's called. One star over a planet that might be another Earth. Now, they've been spending a lot of time over the last few years exploring nearby, near and far. I think it was Kepler satellite. It was just recently shut down. I think it was shut down, Kepler. But I think they're replacing it with something else, the big planet hunter. But they've been going through, well, maybe Kepler wasn't. I don't know. But it's from the Kepler telescope. Kepler has been on this hunt for planets for quite a long time. And they utilize something we talked about here a few weeks back, spectroscopy. It was probably my favorite technology when I was taking astronomy in college. Because there's a lot you can identify. This is basic chemistry. There's a lot you can identify from the colors that you gain when you, let's say, burn something, right? When we were in chemistry, we would have these competitions. I liked chemistry in high school because my teacher was actually my neighbor at the end of the street. And we waited in her driveway for the bus every morning for my whole entire 12 years of school. And when it was raining or snowing, we could actually stand on her porch. And her elderly mom lived there, and she would always bring us out cookies or something in the morning. They were very sweet. But it kind of helped, you know, when you had someone like that. The daughter had been my, she was my chemistry teacher. So it was cool because we knew her. So I could ask her questions and not be afraid or whatever. So I really excelled in chemistry. And one of the things that was cool is she would on Fridays give us a beaker of some liquid. We didn't know what it was. And our job was to figure out what elements were in that beaker. And there were all these different ways you could do tests. You could do reaction tests, you know, put something in and see if it bubbles or light up the Bunsen burner. Like, who would believe now with, like, how scaredy cat they are about everything in schools and, you know, everything's dangerous, like poke you in the eye with a rubber mallet. So let's get rid of them. I don't know. Kickballs are dangerous, right? But we had like Bunsen burners galore everywhere. Torch it, kid. I don't ever remember anyone saying don't wear a tie or long hair. But anyway, but like with the Bunsen burner, you could dipstick it. I don't even remember how we used to do the test, but I would imagine you'd, or maybe you take a pipette, you'd suck it out of the beaker and you put it into a petri dish and then you set it over the top of the Bunsen burner. And, no, actually you had to put it on a strip or something and burn it right in the flame because the colors would burn. And if you had green, you'd be like, oh, I got copper. And if you had yellow, you'd be like, oh, I see sodium, you know, and you would be able to come up with some cursory understanding of what substances were in this liquid beaker. Well, that's pretty much the same sorts of technologies that they use in space, except they're not burning things. They're using redshift and blue shift and lasers and telescopes to try to get the colors that they can identify that then allows them to identify elements. So with Europa, and for a long time, they had already postulated that Jupiter's moon Europa might be one of our best bets in the solar system because they're pretty certain, even though it's all icy, they are certain. Pretty certain. I think they're pretty certain now that there's tectonic activity that is going on Europa. They think it's because Jupiter is just nibbling away from actually having been its own sun. There's a certain terminal volume size. And I don't remember what that is, but when a planet or a heavenly body is being created, there's a certain size and certain chemicals. And if it reaches a certain size and it has certain chemicals in it, well, bloof, it could become a sun like ours. And Jupiter is just a little too small or doesn't have a little of something. I don't know, guys. It's early. But look it up. You'll read about it. I mean, that was a whole part of astronomy, was learning all the different types of Stars and Heavenly Bodies and what it took to become, you know, one thing, like one type of star over another that could become a supernova versus, you know, brown dwarf in the future. But anyway, Jupiter has its own gravitational field, and it's got this huge number of heavenly bodies that are rotating around it as satellites, as little moons. And I mean, remember when we were kids, Jupiter was always my favorite just because of all the pretty colors and the big storm. I remember one of the very first missions, maybe it was Voyager. I think Voyager was the one that went out to the edges of the solar system. It's still going, by the way. And that's the one with that record on it that gives the map as to where Earth is. We're going to talk about that, actually. That record just came up in the news. But I think it was Voyager. When Voyager went past Mars, no, Jupiter, sorry, and took pictures. And those were some of the very first pictures that we were able to get back. And then we had Hubble. They get some good Hubble pictures as well. But I had a bookmark. Trying to think, it must have been the 80s. The bookmark was in color, and it was some of the very first pictures we as humans had ever seen of Jupiter. They were amazing. I coveted that bookmark. And then I started learning about Jupiter's moons. And at that time, I think there were only 9 that we had identified. We're talking probably mid-80s. And now I think there's hundreds. I think they've identified lots and lots and lots. You know, they were probably too small, but there were some big ones. And one of the things that struck me is that they had come out way back when. Remember Thomas Dolby, Europa and the Pirate Twins? This is, again, another one of my favorite tunes. I really think they were, I don't know, when I look back to the 80s, I think we were being pre-programmed. Pre-programmed for the space mission, pre-programmed for technology, pre-programmed for merging with the machine. Once they kicked this party off, and I think this party's been kicked off, but Europa always stuck in my mind. Jupiter and Europa is two places that were very close to me. They meant something to me. Well, they announced NASA had a live Q&A last week. I watched it. Big announcement. And they utilized spectroscopy to analyze these two plumes that they've found now a few times in pictures, these plumes coming out of either pole of Europa, and discover that they're made of hydrogen and oxygen. Well, ding, ding, ding. Hydrogen and oxygen. See, they were sure it had ice on it. They're pretty certain there's tectonic activity because it is rotating, orbiting around a heavenly body that creates a magnetic field and gravity that causes the tectonic activity, which means that there is heat somewhere down inside of Europa. And with the ice on top, they had postulated that they had water under there and lots of it. And you know what? If you were on a Kepler, get off this rock, new planet, new Earth 2.0 hunting mission, the one thing that you're going to be looking for is H2O. Bing! And they've proven they're pretty 99.99% certain with some of these newest spectroscopic observations. They are pretty damn certain that that's a whole hell of a lot of water there. And if they got water and they got heat, started thinking, you know, my dad going down to Antarctica, we found out that the whole Antarctica mission was like in preparation to see what would happen, see what humans would do in isolation for long periods of time in preparation for going to the moon, see how crazy they'd go. Well, one of the things that my dad told me back in 1966 that the scientists had down there is that they had been filling up these fish tanks with fish from under the ice. And what was so amazing about them is that the fish that they were finding under the ice were tropical, prehistoric fish. And not dead, but alive. Something that they didn't think should be even possible. But as I started thinking about it, years later, I was like, but wait a second. We know that we have Mount Erebus down there. We know that there's a lot of volcanic activity down in Antarctica. And there's got to be volcanic vents underneath that very cold water that probably creates a little utopic environment for these fish where they are trapped. Let's say underwater, you got a little underground underwater volcano spewing out all kinds of chemicals and heat in a column. Any of those fish that were ever in there, born, died, reproduced, born, died, reproduced, right? I mean, generations, millions of years they've been doing this. They've been stuck in this one little column of heat. As soon as they venture out of there, it's icy, icy cold. And there's big, scary sea creatures out there. You're not going to make it. So they had, back in the 60s, they had these fish tanks filled with these tropical, prehistoric fish that hadn't had any type of interaction with the outside environment. They hadn't changed any in millions of years. And we say, how is that possible? Well, oh, I don't know. I thought it was last year, maybe the year before. They just, like literally just announced in one of the science publications that they found tropical fish under the ice, prehistoric tropical fish under the ice alive in Antarctica. Now we're talking 50 years later. 50 years later, they finally announced something that I've heard as a story my whole entire life. You know, they even have found fossils of palm trees and things of that nature down in Antarctica. And, you know, they kept saying that it was because of plate tectonics and blah, blah, blah. I mean, it could be a lot of reasons, whether it be plate tectonics or whether we had some sort of pole shift or whatever. It's definitely not a surprise to me that Antarctica at one point had potentially either been in a tropical zone or has migrated to a tropical zone. But what I find interesting is the fact that if they had been in a tropical zone, and we're talking fossils are millions, 52 million years old, is what I'm seeing right here. And if those fish had been living there and all of a sudden there was a big flip of the climate, we went from tropical to extremely not tropical, like minus 120 degrees Fahrenheit. It gets very cold down there. Most of them died, except for the little lucky ones who happened to live around these volcanic vents. And then they never knew any better. Well, let's now take what we've learned about Antarctica. And again, Wernher von Braun went down 1966, 65 to 66, with his mission to the moon. And we find out that that was all about going to space down there. Now let's draw a dotted line, all the way to Europa. Think about it. We got tectonic activity, probably volcanoes. We got liquid water. We got lots of ice. It would be like a big Antarctica on Europa. And I don't know about you, but I live in the Northeast. We get 9 months of, I don't know, it's been pretty pleasant for October and September. So maybe this year will be a little bit different, but Farmer's Almanac says it's going to be a nasty one. But let's say at least we get 6 months of miserable, miserable weather up here. 3 months of very cold and snow. Maybe 3 months of deep freeze. Hey, I don't want to go live on some icy planet to save humanity because we screwed this one up. But that seems to be the name of the game now. We have tech billionaires investing like crazy. We got the feds investing like crazy. We got black ops working on technologies that are going to further our capability to survive in other places beyond Earth. We got Hawking, Zuckerberg, and that Russian billionaire who are going to finance exploration to Alpha Centauri. We talked about that. There's two planets now I saw in Alpha Centauri that they are very serious about, and they want to go check it out. Let's take a look here, CNET. Hawking, Zuckerberg, they don't mention a Russian billionaire, Yuri Milner, have a plan to reach Alpha Centauri like soon. Billionaire investor Yuri Milner pledges $100 million to the effort to send a nanocraft, and these are these CubeSats, to our closest neighboring star system. Some of the richest and smartest people in the world are teaming up for a pretty awesome project that literally goes to the stars. Now, your question is, why are all these rich people putting so much money on getting off this rock? That's where I wanted to get to. Let's get to this 100-year starship. So there's this plan. 100-year starship, I'd like to see. Challenges who we are. Let's look at who we are. We got a doctor. We got SETI Institute. We got, of course, Nichelle Nichols. How weird is that? Uhura is one of the big sponsors of this. Everything that I ever knew, I learned from Star Trek. We got the Denver Museum of Nature and Science. We got the UN Education, Science, Cultural Health Advancement Foundation. Metro State University of Denver. Morehouse College. Texas Southern University. Da Vinci Institute for Technical Management. The Greater Houston Partnership. Colorado Space Business Roundtable. It sounds to me like there is a lot of Colorado, Texas, UN, Nichelle Nichols. That's weird. I didn't realize she was a part of this. And these guys think that our future is elsewhere. Take the next giant leap forward. We exist to make the capability of human travel beyond our solar system a reality within the next 100 years. We unreservedly dedicate ourselves to identifying and pushing the radical leaps in knowledge and technology needed, ding, 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 to achieve interstellar flight, while pioneering and transforming breakthrough applications that enhance the quality of life for all on Earth. See, guys, that's what I was saying. We can't leave this planet if we expect to get things from traditional factories and manufacturing. Not going to happen. We don't have the infrastructure. And if you go to another heavenly body and there's maybe five of you, you're not going to be making too much in a hurry. So they had to come up with all these new ways, like the replicator, all these new engineered living materials and organic chemistry, mixing it with synthetic and little nanobodies to be able to create things that never were possible at the push of a button. I played an excerpt from a TED Talk at the end of the show 2 days ago that was titled Design at the Intersection of Technology and Biology. And what she was talking about, actually, maybe there's a holiday this weekend for the kids, Friday and Monday. It's going to be really tough. I got all the shows still to do, and she's already waiting up there for me. So it's going to be a hard, hard weekend for me. So maybe Monday, what I'll do is cut that. I only put an excerpt of like 3 minutes at the end of a show the other day because I had to fill some space after having technical problems at the beginning. Maybe what we'll do on Monday is I'll cut that interview so it'll fill the hour. I'll do a little intro. But it's very well worth listening to. And it was only last year. And this woman, I mean, she's smiling. She's very pretty. She's the type of person that you would want to be a saleswoman to go sell mixing technology and biology to get humans to open their arms and be sucked into the machine, all in the name of saving this race and getting us off this planet. But no, guys, no. Don't take it. Don't step through that door. But the sad fact of the matter is that as we've been looking at gene drives, CRISPR, Bill Gates now doubling down on his investment, wiping out entire species of creatures on this planet intentionally by screwing with their genes like mosquitoes. This is their newest project. Even potentially creating little flying vaccinators. We read about that project out of Japan. They could turn mosquitoes into flying vaccinators. And pushing buttons. Department of Energy, you know, it keeps coming back to the Department of Energy with the synthetic biology report to Congress in 2013. If we rewind back to the Manhattan Project, a lot of the crazy things started there. And even before Manhattan Project, let's go to some of the beginnings of it. That's where we brought in Operation Paperclip, Wernher von Braun and all his cronies. Not only involved with the Manhattan Project, but also the American Biowarfare Program at Fort Detrick, Maryland, where a lot of this mad science gone mad. First and foremost, it was in the name of bioterror, biowarfare, protecting ourselves, creating vaccines then on the defensive posture after we inked that Geneva Convention to no longer make biological weapons. But then we started messing around with the synthetic stuff. And that's where it got super, super scary. Like, biological weaponry wasn't scary before. But now it's synthetic biological weaponry mixed with a dish and a dose of CRISPR. And add to that biological technology offices. And I just saw that there's another new office within DARPA called Microbial Technology Office. And find out that the DOE has been involved for a very long time, creating microbes that would do things such as, oh, I don't know, eat up oil in a big Gulf oil spill, something along those lines. Yeah, like that. You know, fix those environments that are beyond human repair. All in the name of science. Well, we discovered that it takes some time for this stuff to spin out. I mean, this is like a slow moving train wreck that's happening. When we looked at gene drives, and we know gene drives can potentially destroy the building blocks of life from every corner of the planet, A, T, C, and G, soon to be X and Y. And they can actually, with these gene drives, they can push a genetic trait that they want to modify through an entire population, right? Population suppression, or they can eliminate it, population elimination. And one of the things that they discovered, you know, fruit flies and mosquitoes have very short lifetimes, a few days to a week or so. And so it would be very fast to pass a trait through an entire population of creature that reproduced quickly because the generations only live a week at a time. Bing, 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 bing. So if it took 20 generations or 10 generations for that trait or that elimination to be pushed through the entire population, it would happen within a few months. Humans typically figure a lifetime of a human from birth to reproduction, probably about 20 years, I think, is what they've averaged. Probably a little bit less now. as puberty has been inching to younger and younger ages, which again is another whole problem in and of itself. They don't quite know how that is going to affect us as a species yet. As with any of this technology, right? We got texting, changing our brainwaves in ways that we never imagined. We have children turning into junky psychopaths that are addicted to dopamine because they've been playing on an iPad or playing Minecraft and has to go for emergency psychiatric support multiple times. And we've seen some disturbing stuff, some really, really scary things that technology is doing to not only our environments, but to our mental health as humans, to our physical health as humans. We are being damaged at an irreparable level now. But don't worry about it. They got the arcs. They got the seed vaults. And they're going to take them with them when they bail. But think about this. So this is what I was thinking about in the shower the other day. With a broad sweep guesstimate of a lifespan from birth to reproduction for a human to be like 20 years. And let's just say, let's use that as a nice round number. You're mature enough to have children at 20, and then your children can grow up and have children at 20, and you're still only 40, and so on and so on. At 20-year increments, that gives us like five generations before we reach 100 years. We have five generations to push out before a century has gone by. Well, I find it extremely, extremely, extremely interesting that there was a project announced called the 100-Year Starship. It was just recently. I don't know. They're not that old. I mean, this isn't a society that's been around from, like, the 1960s. I see a copyright trademark date of 2013. So a couple years. I mean, I read about them not too long ago. So we got 100 years to get off this rock. We got all these billionaires dumping all this money in to get off this rock. We even got Boeing now jumping in to get off this rock. We got the Senate approving $9.1 billion to get off this rock. I think that's what the number was. 9.1, not 1.9. Something like that. I don't know. I don't know where the tab is anymore. It's a big amount. Oh, yeah, we're going to Mars. Here we go. Oh, 19. I forgot 10 billion. Ah, what's 10 billion between friends? Yeah, $19.5 billion to get off this rock. And when we look at these engineered living material projects and push a button, create life from DARPA type projects, gene driving, that type of stuff, I got to tell you, if you had to ask me for my professional opinion, one of the things in business that my boss always told me he appreciated about me and why I did what I did was because I have the ability to look down timelines. I mean, it's something I've done since I was a kid. Give me all the input, and I can spit you out potential outputs based upon criteria, just something my brain's been trained to do. If you had to ask me my educated opinion, just with all the craziness that's going on between quote-unquote climate change. I mean, it's not that I don't think the climate's not changing, because it is. Shit's screwed up now. But is this natural or man-made? Is this weather warfare? You know, I wouldn't doubt it. I've seen a lot of evidence that would convince me that there are some issues going on. People trying to manipulate and control the environment to create an artificial scarcity, to create disaster capital. We heard that a long time ago. Somebody hit on some big investor. That's what he was talking about, disaster capital. You know, the big boys, the big financial moguls win whether the markets are going up and down, whether or not things are going good or we are in complete, utter, smash disaster. They make money on it all, so they don't really care. They're all building their bunkers. Pigman had a video the other day. Bunkers are up 700% in sales for 2016. And they're all the rich guys. Lots and lots of Hollywood insiders, all underground, by the way, and all luxury. And there's politicians investing as well. Remember, we got all these millionaires that are sitting in our legislative bodies now, right? Because, hey, Jules for Congress, I want insider trade. But they're making some of these bunker companies, Inc., non-disclosure agreements, so they can't even tell anyone that they bought underground bunkers. Guys, I think that they've all been told, and I know this sounds like a tinfoil hat wearing theory, but I don't think it is. I don't think it is. I think they've been told, we got 100 years left. We got to make it. Don't worry about it, though. We're working on longevity medicine. We'll be able to live to be 522. You just got to save all your shit. And there's some big stuff coming, but don't worry. Build yourself an underground bunker and get all your supplies. We'll make sure we know where you are. So when the day comes for us to rescue you, to take you as one of the million people that Elon Musk now says he's going to take to Mars in order to save humanity, we'll make sure we come find you. You guys just got to tough it out. 100 years. 100 years left. 5 generations. That's about all it'll take for us to utilize these gene drives and run some of these new sequences through entire populations of organisms. So by the time that this has become the planet of Dr. Moreau, we will be ready to go. We'll have our little molecular factories all ready to go. We got it all figured out. We tested it all on Earth. We're going to leave the degenerates, the defective humans, the 1.0s, and the ones that were our experimental mistakes, the ones that got messed up beyond belief and their DNA is now damaged. We don't want that. No. We don't want damaged DNA in our gene pool. We need to save the species. We need to get off this rock. I mean, guys, I don't know. Call me lunatic. I don't think I'm a lunatic. I see all these dots connect and makes me want to cry. They really screwed things up. Hawking, Zuckerberg have a plan to reach Alpha Centauri like soon. Yuri Milner, billionaire Russian investor, pledges $100 million to the effort of sending nanocrafts to our closest neighboring star system. Some of the richest and the smartest people in the world are teaming up for some pretty awesome projects to literally go to the stars. Investor Yuri Milner, cosmologist Stephen Hawking, and Zuckerberg revealed their plan. This was in April of 2016. To send a butterfly-sized spacecraft to our nearest neighboring star system, Alpha Centauri, within our lifetimes. Milner pledged $100 million to the Breakthrough Star Shots Initiative. Ding! It's not moonshots anymore. Now it's star shots. To develop a system that could propel a tiny nanocraft to 20% the speed of light, allowing for the possibility of traveling just the 4 minuscule light years required to reach Alpha Centauri within about 20 years of its launch. Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg is a member of the Starshot board alongside Milner and Hawking. Earth is a wonderful place, but it might not last forever, says Hawking in an email sent to reporters ahead of a press conference. Now, if somebody has a clue, it would be Stephen Hawking. Stephen Hawking has been warning about a lot of these technologies and about our hubris in using them and about how dangerous they could potentially be. Whether or not it happened to be artificial intelligence, killer robots, or engineering life without thinking about the consequences and letting it loose in the environment. Sooner or later, he says, we must look to the stars. And this breakthrough star shot is a very exciting first step in this journey. Earth is a wonderful place, but we're not going to always be here. Let's put the scale of this trip into perspective. Alpha Centauri is 25 trillion miles from Earth. Holy crap. They made it sound like it's a hop, skip, and a jump in 4 light years. But it's a distance That would take 30,000 years to cover with today's fastest spacecraft, but the Starshot Initiative is proposing that this system will get there 1,000 times faster. And Milner says that all the technology now to get to Alpha Centauri either exists or it's right on the horizon. And yeah, they had some sort of new propulsion system where they had a cone. And this cone then had lasers that were pointing back into it. And it would use those lasers pointing in to then create the propulsion shooting out of this cone. And it looked pretty ingenious, actually. Looked like it would really work. The program to be built around technology that uses light to propel a tiny spacecraft that can collect data and images and send them back to Earth. This nanocraft, which can fit in the palm of your hand, will carry cameras, photon thrusters. So there you go. It's not even lasers. It's like photons. A power supply and a navigation and communication equipment. And it'll be propelled by an ultralight and thin light sail. A larger version of this technology was launched this year. And yes, how interesting that it was using that origami technology developed out of the Weiss Institute at Harvard, home of the Robo Bees, which will then be pushed by an Earth-based light beaming structure that will need to be constructed. So I guess they're going to have some sort of light laser beam platform up in space or something. Visualize shooting a small sail with a very powerful laser to send a spaceship attached to it, hurtling through space. And that is basically the idea. Starshot's leaders imagine developing ways to deploy a number of nanocrafts that can then be propelled via the light beam on Earth. This research and development effort will be led by Peter Warden, a former director of NASA Ames Research Center. And, you know, that was another thing. After they pretty much shut down NASA, a lot of those very, very, very educated scientists were out of jobs. But don't worry about it, because we have this entire commercialized space program that is now launching. We have all the big rich tech guys involved. We have all this money behind it, not only industry, but also government. And their plan is to get off this rock within the next 100 years. And as we have institutions that are creating engineered living materials and able to create desktop manufacturing, just like Eric Drexler had always dreamed of, that day is coming, and it is coming very soon. I just saw a story the other day out of ScienceAlert.com, September 29, 2016, making rocket fuel from water could drive a power revolution on Earth, and this is the fuel of the future. Researchers, again, led by what? A former NASA chief technologist. So it's like they took that beehive and poked a big hole in it. And all these NASA engineers now are running around bzz, 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 creating little startups and working for rich tech billionaires who want to get off this rock. And they've spurred innovation beyond belief. Researchers led by a former NASA chief technologist are hoping to launch a satellite carrying water as the source of its fuel. This team from here, Cornell University, guided by Mason Peck, wants their device to become the first shoebox-sized CubeSat. And remember, we've talked about CubeSats a whole bunch of times. They're launching them everywhere, and NASA's going to help. So is the Air Force. They're going to be able to monitor and tie the whole world together to the Internet of Everything. And they want their device to become the first shoebox-sized CubeSat to orbit the moon while demonstrating the potential of water as a source of spacecraft fuel. It is a safe, sustainable substance that is relatively common even in space, but could also find greater use here on Earth as we search for alternatives to fossil fuels. But until we develop a warp drive or some other futuristic propulsion system, space travel is likely to rely largely on the kind of propellant-based rockets we use today, or some of those photon, whatever the hell they said, photon propellants, which actually would be kind of cool. All right, well, I guess, shit, I still didn't make it through all the space stuff today, but you know what we're going to do? I have a video here sitting in my queue, and it's Friday. It's only a minute or two, but I can't even find myself. JJ, JJ, there we go, Jules. Add Jules to the call. Maybe, I don't know, when I first connected today, my machine had gone into a Skype update shutdown. All right, here we go. Maybe, maybe, just maybe, do, 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 do. Let's not run out the show. Do, 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 do. We got another minute. All right. Bunker sales. Let me make sure I got volume. Bunker sales up 700% in 2016. Guys, they know it's coming.
If you're wondering how our politicians and other super rich people really feel about how things are going in our country right now, then listen to this. Upscale sales at Rising S Bunkers, a company that specializes in fancy underground bunkers, have increased a whopping 700% this year. That's according to Gary Lynch, the company's owner. He told The Hollywood Reporter that actors, pro athletes, and politicians are all investing in high-end bunkers like there's no tomorrow. Literally. For an unnamed Oscar winner, he just installed a 37-room, 9,000-square-foot underground complex in Napa Valley. The bunker includes a bowling alley, sauna, jacuzzi, shooting range, and massive home theater. It cost more than $10 million. Another customer with their own television show just built a $10 million complex of underground mansions in Minneapolis. Lynch has installed all sorts of underground things for rich and famous customers. Swimming pools, game rooms, gyms, greenhouses, you name it. And if you're wondering how all that will continue to work after the apocalypse, the bunkers come with their own power sources, which run air and water filtration systems. But it's not just eccentric actors building luxury bunkers.
It's politicians and even Bill Gates himself, guys. All right, everyone have an awesome Friday. Make sure you stick around. Lots of great radio this weekend, and I will catch up with you on Monday. Everybody take care.